Make May your month for big cash winnings at your neighborhood Washington Gold Casino. Stop by the Silver Dollar Casinos in SeaTac, Renton, and Mill Creek and see how their guests are winning thousands in cash prizes. So why not make today your day to strike it rich? Washington Gold Casinos. So close, it feels like home.
This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, this hour, Brock and Salk, is brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. We're over at Safeco Field today, a little day baseball. Mariners will play at 12:40. Scott Servais will come join us at 9:30. I found myself thinking about something. You were talking about how good the Astros are, and they're really that good. Do you think that it will become a franchise-altering moment when the Mariners didn't, like, lay down and throw a complete fit like a child throwing a tantrum before allowing the Astros to join the AL West? Like, how different is life if the Astros are still in the National League?
Yeah, be careful what you wish for.
Right?
You, me, everybody in town, good. The Astros are coming in. These guys are dysfunctional.
Perennial 100-loss team.
Yes.
They were at that point for like a couple of years. But, I mean, the Astros in their history have generally been pretty good.
They were
good,
the Lastros.
Yeah.
That's what they were known as.
Yes. Yeah, but they had, you're right, they had some level of success and went to World Series, and, you know, I think we've got some pretty good baseball
fans. They've been great in the 80s. Yeah. They've been great again in the early 2000s. I mean, like, they've been a really good team. They always had trouble getting by the Cardinals and stuff, but, like, the Astros have certainly had a bunch of moments of real success in their franchise. They've got a real fan base, and they have completely turned into an absolute juggernaut. So, you know, we never really thought about it at the time.
Yeah, I mean, three consecutive seasons of being more than 40 games out of the playoffs.
Well, at that moment, right. Those 3 years, they were tanking. There's no doubt.
Previously, six of the last 7 years, they were more than 10 games out of the playoffs.
They had absolutely tanked during that time. But as a franchise,
right,
in their history, well, it's not like every year had been awful. They'd had some really good teams.
I think there's a good comp here that's going to get you to the Michael Bennett phone calls here and everybody jumping in. The comp would be the Seahawks with the 49ers. The 49ers for years, like, oh, good. Now the Seahawks come from the AFC West, and now we welcome these slappies in, and the 90s are horrible. And yeah, Mike had a good year in the 05, but, oh, we get the Seahawks. And then, well, Pete comes to town in 2010, and for the last decade or so, how's that felt to 49ers
fans? You've just been wiping the floor with them.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think there's probably a pretty good comp there as well. Anyway, as we were talking to Greg Bishop, this really got under my skin yesterday, and based on some of the response on Twitter, I'm not the only one who was fired up about this. And I don't mean to yell and scream, because I do. There's parts of me that are conflicted, but Michael Bennett reading during team meetings, to me, is just a final straw.
I was with Michael Bennett all fall last year, so he never ran, unfortunately. But, like, he was telling me he read books during team meetings last year. Like, that was, like, he said it just kind of normally. He'd heard Carroll say the same thing over and over for 7 years.
That was Greg Bishop from Sports Illustrated, who was on with us yesterday, telling us the story that Mike had specifically told him. And there's something about it. I don't know. Maybe it's being a parent. Maybe it's being a, you know, doing some management work. But the idea of somebody specifically showing you that level of disrespect, it really hurts. And maybe it's having been on teams myself and never at a level, obviously, like Michael Bennett. But even in high school or even Little League or even T-ball, you just don't show up your coach like that unless there's a really, really good reason to do so. Unless you think it's time for mutiny. We have to mutiny. This can't work anymore. This regime is done. I can't play under it anymore. It is too horrible, either for my well-being or for winning or for whatever. And it is time for us to all rise up and revolt against this horrible Little League, professional coach, because there's no way we can continue to suffer under this.
Right.
And there would be two maybe valid reasons why I could understand Michael Bennett acting that way.
Okay.
And Richard Sherman, too. Put them both together with one big blanket around them. There are two reasons I could come up
all
with.
All right. Okay.
One, you play for a coach who is so cruel, who is so oppressive, that you have to say, "Let my people go," like Moses once did.
Well done.
That you are working for Pharaoh, for Ramses himself.
Cruel and unusual punishment.
All right, so if it's Bill Belichick and the way he treats, if it was Dave Wyman brought up Chuck Knox back in the day, in hockey it was Mike Keenan or Pat Burns back. I mean, like, Mike, if you were playing for one of the, Dick Williams was like
Coach
this as a manager.
Coach Patera's not giving us water in Cheney. It's 100 right. degrees.
Okay, if you were playing for that coach who was so cruel and he won't let you speak your mind, he won't let you talk, you have so much to say, you are a political being, you are a man in today's society who is active and engaged and woke, and it is time for you to speak up, and nobody will let you. By all means, lead the revolution, Michael. Lead the revolution,
all
Richard.
Right. That's
you
one.
Have every right to fight back and stand up for yourself and your beliefs against an oppressive regime of Ramses.
Okay.
And not that sheep
not
either. Not that sheep that you see at North Carolina. I'm talking about the Pharaoh.
Oh, you need to stand up to that thing, too.
No.
You just don't want it standing.
I don't have that kind of stones.
You don't want it swaying.
No, thank you.
You find Ramses in an alley, you turn
no,
around.
No, thank you. Nobody's saying to him, let my people go.
Oh,
forget it.
Okay.
The other
two.
Reason that I could understand, and you guys can jump in here, 206-421-3776. The other reason that I could understand Michael Bennett and Richard Sherman showing such blatant disregard for their head coach is if his style obviously didn't work. Look, in 2010, when the Mariners completely imploded, they were unbelievably disrespectful to Don Wakamatsu. It wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
They were a losing franchise. He had never done anything in this league. I love Wak. I really think he could have had success, and I would love to see him get another shot somewhere, but he hadn't at that point. He'd never done anything.
Yep.
And you see that all the time. I mean,
Steve Spurrier system with the Redskins. It just doesn't work. You're
this doesn't
coach.
Work.
You're
you can't do this.
Yep.
Absolutely. Just, you've never proven anything. You know, you're a major league manager who's never played in the big leagues. Okay, yep. I don't respect you. If there was some level of this has just never worked and you've never proven it and I don't believe that we're ever going to succeed this way, then I understand that players at some point have to do the only thing that they can, which is to show everyone just how bad things really are and prove that the coach has lost the team.
Yep.
Those are both really, really good reasons to disrespect your coach.
Mm.
They don't work here. Not where Pete Carroll won a championship and went back to one the next year and has had success almost every single season, and not when he has allowed them to speak their mind.
So 100%, okay? You're 100%. Actually, for you, you're a little over 100%
maybe.
On this deal.
My mic's running a little hot.
Yeah. Is it 90% then on Bennett to you? Like, is 90% of you
just
livid with
Bennett? I'm not saying that. I actually think Pete Carroll and John Schneider have to share in the blame here.
Equally?
I don't know, but yeah, maybe. Because I think coaches and general managers, it's on them to select the right players and to coach them the right way. And if Pete failed to reach Michael Bennett and Richard Sherman, then that's on him. And if John Schneider brought those guys back longer than he needed to, then that's on him. So I can absolutely put the blame on those guys. They're also acting and taking action this offseason in order to remedy that fact.
Yep.
But okay, yeah, I can put the blame for what happened on them, but that doesn't make me in any way less disappointed in Michael Bennett. Like, what are you doing? It just defies any emotion or logic to me.
Yes, but it continues a trend of what we heard from Richard, too. I mean, of some of the most vocal veteran guys there. And to be honest with you, Salk, he was pretty transparent through the years as he sat down with us. It had been his number one concern. You know, these guys, like, I'm going to implement my culture every single year and my stories and the way we go about it. And, yes, I want to make sure that as I activate the young guys in this league, and this is a developmental team that is built on the backs of its young players, that I can't lose my vets. You know, I can't lose Cliff and Michael and Richard and Russ and Bobby and these guys that have, you know, been more than activated
yep.
for 4, 5, 6, 7 years.
But I'm still surprised that they would take the cheap shots. Like, okay, fine. Maybe you got tired of Pete's routine. But why the cheap shots? That's what I don't know. Just on a human level. Why the cheap shots?
It's just the enormous ego, Mike.
But
it's enormous ego, and I've said this to you before. And, you know, you may, I don't know, you've gotten to know me for the last decade. If you knew me while I was playing, you would have seen a different guy to a degree. You know, Molly would say it to me all the time, like, do you know how self-absorbed you are? Like, we go to functions, and instead of, like, asking anybody else any questions, you're just, like, in your own world.
Dude, Molly's keeping it real.
Oh, she's always
Woo!
Kept it 100, baby. Yes.
Whoa.
And I'd leave there like,
Molly?
What are you talking about? It's not my fault they're asking me about the team and football and everything else, right? Like, yeah, but you didn't ask them anything about their lives. And you know what?
I mean, to be fair, their lives probably weren't very interesting. Looking, let's be clear.
But you are in that bubble.
No,
I think
I understand.
Any player.
But this isn't that, though, Brock. This isn't to the outside world. This is in the inside. This is how they're treating him to the inside, in the building. Not to the outside world. Yeah. Showing disrespect in the building, biting the hand that feeds him for no reason. For a guy that had been nothing but kind to both of them, and for a team that had continually given them both a ton of money, and for a group that allowed them to go out and win. I can't fathom
and how much
what
cover.
It was that they decided was so intolerable about Pete Carroll that they had to show him that level of disrespect inside the building. It doesn't make sense. And it maybe is on Pete to try to figure that out. I will absolutely own up to my own theory. But I still don't understand why.
Well,
Michael
let's be
Bennett
clear.
Would do
let's
that.
Be clear before we jump on these
and
calls.
And we will get the calls here. 206-421-3776.
Let's be very clear about this, Mike. If this was year two or three of the Pete Carroll regime, I bet there's a huge part of you that would have stuck your chest out and said, told you so.
No. What do you mean a huge part? All of me. What do you mean a huge part?
I was trying.
Every pound that I have would have said that.
I was just trying to give you a little.
Oh, no.
Just attention, baby.
I absolutely would have.
A little humility card.
You would have
said, I told you. This is why all the people on the East Coast, that's why he was ran out of New England. He's not an NFL coach. He's
and it would be true.
Yep.
It would have been true.
But this didn't happen in the first two or three
This
years.
Happened after the guy won a championship and went to back-to-back Super Bowls.
Yes.
This happened after he allowed these guys so much. And maybe.
Their greatest strength became ultimately the greatest
Let's
weakness.
Hear from the people. 206-421-3776. Who do you want to talk to first? Cameron? What's up, Cameron, on line four in Seattle? Good morning, Cameron.
Hello, Cameron.
Just to push back a little bit about all the blame being on Michael Bennett, I think a good analogy would be a teacher. And if you're a teacher and you're not reaching your students, you need to change your message. And yes, it is disrespectful from like a baseline human level to read a book when someone's trying to get up and teach. But if your message isn't connecting with the students, then you need to change something, especially if you've been saying the same thing for 5 or 6 years and you know that it's getting kind of old on some of the players. If you want to keep those players and you want to keep them performing at a high level.
All right, so let's say you're Michael Bennett. And here's the reason I struggle with these parenting and teacher analogies, because parents and teachers are teaching kids. They're teaching children. Michael Bennett, by his own words, is a grown man. And is asked over and over again to be treated that way. If you and maybe this happened and we don't know about it. So let me be clear. I don't know all the information. But if you're Michael Bennett and everything has gotten old and stale and your teacher's not reaching you anymore, you have a couple choices at that point. One, you can tell him about it, man to man. Ask for a little office time with the coach and say, hey, coach, this message isn't resonating with me anymore. Do you think we can do something to change it up? Mm-hmm. Me and some of the veterans are starting to struggle here. What can we do before this gets really boring? Two, you can not re-sign with the Seahawks only a few months earlier when you had an opportunity to not sign an extension. Or three, you can purposefully and disrespectfully read a book in the middle of team meetings. Which one would you choose, Cameron?
I'm not saying that any – well, I think him
Cameron,
reading the
which
book,
one would you choose?
I personally would not do that. I would just suck it up, and you signed your contract and you need to honor that, and that's your terms and services with the team that you signed. But I think something that might have happened that if you listen to some of the other players is maybe they were really frustrated that there weren't coaching changes going on sooner with what happened after the end of the Super Bowl. And I think that's a perfectly reasonable expectation
Agreed.
For the players to say – we didn't like this, and a lot of people were questioning it, and we want some form of change because what happened wasn't what we felt like should have happened.
Great
and they don't
call,
have to
Cam.
Answer
appreciate
that, but you
it,
can
really
understand that. Where he's coming from.
Really good phone call. We appreciate it. But I'll come back to the other thing there, Brock. Then don't resign. Michael Bennett re-signed with the Seahawks after Daryl Bevel was kept around as long as he was.
Yes. And let's be very clear about Michael Bennett. That is one volatile dude.
It's true.
One day
that is true.
One day he could be at the front of the room, right? One day he could be at the front of the class, taking notes, engaged, yelling at guys and making sure everybody's awake and on it. And the next day
the
he
drop
is
drop of a hat.
Yes. And we have seen that personally. And many of us have watched it professionally.
Yeah, it's
and
funny.
Privately.
To me, this is not a Michael Bennett story so much, though, as a Pete Carroll story, right? I mean, the Bennett thing is absolutely aggravating, but now he's no longer a Seahawk, and a lot of the texters have sort of reminded us of that. Okay, Bennett's not a Seahawk, it's not news. Of course it is.
Yep.
Because this shows shows you how bad things went last year, and it raises back up some of these questions about Pete Carroll that I think should be null and void at this point. But Colin Cowherd cut six here just a couple of weeks ago, Brock. He's still on the Pete Carroll may not be suited for what we're doing here in Seattle right now.
It's the same formula Pete used at USC in New England. Huge energy, very pro player. Players obviously buy in. You play to their vanity. And then ultimately, it's not sustainable. Saban and Belichick's way is sustainable. The system over the player. Get your ego. Leave it at the door. None of this rah-rah political stuff.
Is it?
What is it? Being rah-rah political stuff?
Yeah. When has anyone ever said rah-rah and politics together?
Yeah. Obviously, you've never heard those songus chants.
Yeah, you've never been to a rally.
Oh, that's
political.
What it is. Yeah.
And I guess,
rah,
obviously,
rah.
Colin didn't read the Wickersham article on New England, nor, you know, is paying attention to what's going on now.
See? That's rah-rah political rally right there for tough choices.
Yeah, and I would also say to those texted in, like, come on, this is not a story. Are you sure it's not? What's Earl thinking right now? What's Earl thinking about this culture? You know, Bobby and Doug and Russ and KJ and the rest of the veterans that have been here 5, 6, 7 years. It absolutely, for your most important players and leadership, is very, very relevant today.
206-421-3776. How about Brad in Ann Arbor? What's up, Brad? Good morning.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I mean, I just wonder what, like, an 18- or a 20-year-old Michael Bennett would say to his current self. I mean, this guy was not a high-star recruit going into college, you know, wasn't expected to make the pros even. Here he is making $500,000 a game, and he can't bring himself to even pretend to pay attention in a meeting just for the leadership point, just to, you know, show the younger players how to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it really pisses me off. I mean, I think this is where players can really lose their fans, right? I mean, we can't imagine making that amount of money. And then even if we did, to not even put in the effort, I think it's infuriating.
Well, I think it goes, yeah, I appreciate the phone call, Brad. I think it also goes to show, like, just how much and how important it is off the field. You know, people are diminishing. People were laughing at us. Again, talk about this whole voluntary workout and what a joke show and it doesn't matter and what are you talking about and any of that stuff. These are pros. No, they're humans. They're volatile. They're emotional. And I think you have to establish your culture. And this never ever happened early in their building process. You know what? It didn't. When Lindell White went in to take an extra potty break, okay, you know what? Go ahead. In fact, pack your bags and get the heck out of town. Okay, you don't sit up in the meetings. So Hushman's out and your body language is terrible. We'll eat $8 million. You are up and you are out of here. We're just not going to deal with this as we build the culture of this program.
How hungry they were. I remember one of the coolest things I always thought was after they beat the Broncos, win the Super Bowl in New York, and in the locker room, they go to break it down. They say, you already know what it is. 1, 2, 3, what's next? They just won a Super Bowl less than an hour ago, and they're already, what's next? We're so hungry that we're pushing to the next thing.
And they obviously lost some of that hunger. But here's the other thing, and I wrote, and maybe I sound sort of angry in talking about this, and I don't mean to be. The other emotion that I felt was sad. I feel sad for Pete. I really do. I feel sad for a guy that, and if I understand the story right, maybe I don't, but this is sort of one way in which it makes some sense to me. Pete Carroll shows up from USC after and has, you know, idiots like me crushing him right off the bat, saying there's no chance this will ever work. Petey pom pom, never gonna work.
Rah rah political stuff.
Your slogans.
Pete's working in rah rah political things in the locker room every day. He's a college coach, and it'll never work with grown men. And over the course of time, he proves everybody who thinks that wrong. He wins. He has success. He wins a Super Bowl. He's on the verge of winning another. And yeah, maybe in that moment he takes a lot of grief from the national media because he ultimately is responsible for the call that was one of the worst in Super Bowl history, in sports history. But he handles it with such aplomb that anybody with even a little bit of a brain comes away with respect for Pete Carroll and the way he handles it, okay?
Yep.
And then over the next few years, he battles to try to get through this incredibly difficult moment that affected everybody on the team. He does all these different things, right? And he does it with great respect for the people who are closest to him, for his guys, for Richard Sherman, for Russell Wilson, for Michael Bennett, for Bobby Wagner, for Marshawn Lynch. He shelters every one of those guys and their quirks and their personality and all the bullets that he takes from those guys. And ultimately, what do they do? Ultimately, they burn him. I mean, what's that story about the frog and the scorpion, right? And the scorpion says the frog's got he's got to carry the frog. I got to remember the actual parable, but how do you usually good with these things?
No, it's feeling good. Just keep going.
The scorpion wants the frog to take it across the water, and the frog's like, yeah, I don't really feel good about this. He's like, no, I'm not going to sting you. Just take me over to the island. The frog's like, yeah, I don't feel really good about this. No, take me across. Okay, fine, I'll do it. You seem like a really nice scorpion. And halfway out, the scorpion stings the frog, knowing that both of them are going to drown because he's now stung. And the frog's like, what are you doing? Now we're both dead. And the scorpion goes, yeah, I'm a scorpion.
It's what I do,
idiots. Like, and I feel like Pete, in some ways, is the frog here. Like, he gives these guys just enough respect and really trusts them to do what they want to do and feels like, okay, I've earned their trust and respect. Surely they'll act like men. And what do? They act like the scorpion.
Yeah, but you know what? Again,
and it tears their team apart.
It does, and I think all that is very fair. But there's something Cameron said on that phone call, too, is, you know what? And we heard this, Mike. We heard it. Not just in some of the outbursts from Richard emotionally, but, you know, he threw Daryl Bevel under the bus and ran over him five different times.
Yeah.
And the coach didn't do anything about it. Like, there was no penalty. There was no punishment. There was none of that. Right? He played every game, and it wasn't and Pete would said what to us? Oh, he'll address it. No, he didn't. Richard's going to be the scorpion, and who Richard is. He will never, ever apologize for anything.
It's too bad, though.
You know?
Because I really hope this doesn't end up being the thing that ultimately takes Pete down. Now he's fighting back, and I hope this works out. Let's grab Jonathan, who's in Houston. Phone line's pretty jammed here. Go ahead, Jonathan.
I'm wondering where the veterans are on this team. If you've got players that have been there 5 to 7 years, they've heard the stories over and over. At what point do they own the culture? Where are the Doug Baldwins? Why aren't they bringing the other players in line?
That's a great point. That's a great point, Jonathan. And where's Cliff Avril? Like, Bennett, come on, dude. Shut your book and pay attention. You know? Where were some of the other kind of veteran voices in
Maybe they were there. I mean, we don't know that they weren't there doing those things, right? Like Cliff Avril, Cam Chancellor, Doug Baldwin, maybe they did, and maybe that's part of the reason those guys – I mean, obviously Cliff and Cam got hurt, but maybe that's part of the reason those guys are still here. Michael Bennett and Richard Sherman aren't. Yep. And I don't know. I haven't heard any one of those leaders express their displeasure with Michael Bennett getting dealt or Richard Sherman getting cut. Have you?
I got two words written down here. And I wonder from a GM, from a head coach, as they evaluate, right? I mean, is this – comes out, and they knew all of this anyway, but I've got just two words here. Is it too loyal?
From Pete's side?
Pete and John. Too loyal. Too loyal to continue to pay.
I think that's pretty clear that's been part of the problem.
Too loyal to continue to pay, right? A lot of these players, contracts and second and sometimes third contracts. Too loyal to a staff, to Tom and to Daryl. That, you know what, maybe this should have been done a few years.
But, Brock, hold on the too loyal thing, that's supposed to burn you because you stay with guys too long and they get old. That's supposed to burn you in that regard, but the trade-off is supposed to be the loyalty you get back for treating them with such with such respect. And that's why this one hurts more than Michael Bennett or Richard Sherman getting hurt or old. Like, I'm not up in arms over Cam Chancellor getting hurt. Yeah, the Seahawks probably showed too much loyalty to him by continuing to re-sign him, and same with Michael Bennett, and they maybe are going to break down. But the trade-off is supposed to be undying loyalty back.
Yep.
And instead you get this? It just it doesn't sit right with me at all.
It is an amazing guy.
It does not sit right with me.
It is one we could do for 6 hours.
It really bugs me out. We may get back onto the phones here with this at 9 o'clock. We'll see. Scott Servais going to join us at 9:30. We're getting real close to the draft. A week away now, Brock, from the NFL draft. And you've got the one profile I've been wanting to hear since this whole thing started. The guy I would love more than anything else to see fall to the Seahawks at number 18. It's next on Brock and Salk.
Get uninterested.
Hey, Brock Hewitt here for Toyota Puyallup. You know, when you're shopping for a new vehicle, you want the best value and to be treated fairly. You want confidence that the dealership will be there long after the sale. Well, Toyota Puyallup is Washington's most awarded Toyota dealer for customer satisfaction, and they've been doing it for almost 50 years. Toyota Puyallup has more than 700 new Toyotas for you to choose from and one of the largest selections of Toyota trucks in the Northwest. Plus, they all come with 2 years of complimentary maintenance. So go see Carrie and her team at Toyota Puyallup, putting you first since 1970.
Interrupted hot.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
All right, it's Safeco Field. We are Brock and Salk. He's Brock. I'm Mike. We're hanging out today getting ready for Scott Service, who will join us coming up an hour from now at 9:30. Hope you're having a good drive to work this morning. Beautiful day, and we are a week away, Brock, from the NFL draft. Now, look, I don't know whether the Seahawks are going to pick at number 18. I don't know whether they're going to end up trading Earl Thomas before then or on that day or not at all. But if this guy's available when the Seahawks have a pick, I want them to make it.
With the 18th pick in the NFL draft,
Brock Heward's draft profile. The names worth watching for the Seahawks' first-round pick. Every morning at 8:30 leading up to the draft.
The Seattle Seahawks select
Vita Vea, defensive tackle, the University of Washington. And I'll answer it right away. Not 8 minutes from now, after I give you analysis, Salk, I'm taking Vita Vea at 18. I'm taking him. I think he's a cornerstone kind of guy. I think he plays in this league a long time. I think his talents are just incredibly unique. And there's really three things that jump out to me. Unlike many of these prospects, Harold Landry, guys that you've not seen play, you know, different prospects from all over the country. I think anybody really listening right now that enjoys, you know, this segment, some of the draft analysis, you know Vita Vea inside and out. You've watched him. You've watched him grow and develop from a high school running back, D lineman, kind of quasi-weird, unbelievable athlete football player into one of the most dominant forces in all of college football. He's a Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year. There was great debate with, obviously, what Mataafa did at Washington State, but he was the Morris Trophy Award winner, and there was no debate about that, because you ask any offensive lineman in this league, they did not want to block that guy. In fact, two guys didn't want to block him. In fact, in the Apple Cup, I think one of the endearing images for any Husky fan are two Cougars trying to block the bull that is Vita Vea, and he's pushing the pocket back right into the lap of Luke Falk, who would never, ever get settled in those Apple Cups, and Vita a big reason why. How is he able to do that? Well, it helps when you're nearly 6'5 and 347 pounds. It helps when you bench press 225 pounds 41 times at the combine with ease. It helps when they put that GPS unit on them, which the Huskies do. It's called the catapult system that measures velocity and speed and workload, and he runs over 20 miles an hour at 340 plus pounds. It helps you dominate all of those things. It's why Todd McShay has Vita Vea, like I do, a top 10 talent.
I would say top 10. When we look at it, there's a good chance that we see four quarterbacks go in the top 10, whether it's to four of the top six teams picking or if there's a team that trades up. But then you start to look at it, I think, between the Bucks, the Bears, the Niners, the Raiders, all of those teams in that area. Then you get to the Bengals at 12. I think somewhere in that range. It would be hard for me to imagine that he gets out of the top 15.
Mike Mayock, I believe this was with us earlier in the evaluation as well. You know, if you're going to be a top 10 pick in this league, you're going to be a quarterback, you're going to be a pass rusher, you're going to do something unbelievably elite like Bradley Chubb and Saquon Barkley can do. But if you're going to be a 347-pounder, you've also got to have the ability to get to the passer. That was Mike Mayock's question, I think, throughout this evaluation, is does he have enough game and versatility to get home? Here was Mayock.
Today's NFL, it's not just being about being a run stuffer as a defensive tackle. It's about can you pressure the quarterback, and his value will be determined by what the league thinks he can do as far as third down and sub packages. And there's a lot of excitement about watching him at the combine and getting to know this kid.
And it's continued. He traveled all over the country. His agent's a friend of mine, a guy that I know very well here in the market. And Vita Vea has been beloved. Everywhere he has gone, it is that charisma, it is that charm, the ability to communicate. We're going to chat with Vea next week before he heads to Dallas for the draft, and you're going to feel it through the airwaves as well. It's overwhelming. It's why when he came back to school for his junior year, he was, you know, the biggest recruit for Chris Peterson. But this is also, I'm going to give you three last points on Vea, and again, why I take him at 18. And Coach Peterson spoke to this. This was before he came back for last season, and I think it still stands true today. There's more in Chris in Vita Vea's game. Here's his college head coach.
He still has so much unrealized potential that this guy can do some unbelievable things on the football field, and his best days are in front of him. And his stock, as high as it was, can change significantly if he can take the next step, in which we all believe he can. And now he's talking about game-changing money and those type of things. And so you know, I was really proud of him because I thought he made a great decision.
And that decision was to come back to school last year and become the Defensive Conference Player of the Year and the Morris Trophy Award winner, and I think going to be a top 12 pick. So that's number one, unrealized potential. Number two, in this system, he understands ball, Mike. This is not one of those systems that just lines up in a 4-3 and you play the spread every week. In the Pac-12, you're going to play power football against Stanford. You are going to play the spread. You've played Alabama. You played the very best. You played Penn State. You know, and at every single turn, the game has never been too big for him at all. He understands ball. And then lastly, and this is why you get drafted in the top 12. You just have a size, speed, and versatility component that's truly unique. And that's what I want to see in Seattle. I want to see him be a five technique in early downs like Red Bryant and absolutely be immovable force against the right tackle and a tight end, which he could be. And then I want to see him have the ability to play the one and the three, which he can do, and split double teams and put those guards and centers right into the lap of the quarterback. He can do all of those things, and that's why I think he's a top 10 to 12 pick. And if he is sitting on that board for somehow, in some way, in some reason, at number 18 for the first time in 2 weeks here of going through these prospects, yes, I do draft Vita Vea.
All right, that's today's draft prospect for Brock. Let me give you two potential comps. Tell me if you like either of these. One, I think I've probably heard before. How about Haloti Ngata?
Yes.
Is there a lot of Haloti Ngata in him?
Yeah, there is. And I remember very vividly, we were sitting in a production meeting, and Jim Zeroli, my college football producer, said to Bilotti, who's the best player you've ever had? Mike Bilotti. And Mike Bilotti had some good ones for decades at the University of Oregon. A lot of them that played a long time in the NFL. And there was zero hesitation. I mean, zero. By the time the question was out from Jimmy Z, Bilotti said, Haloti Ngata. Haloti Ngata. He is just so physically overwhelming. And yeah, I think that's a pretty decent comp.
The other name that came through a texter, but I think it's an interesting comp, is Cortez.
Yeah, another 50 pounds and even faster. Cortez had, you know, what was so unique about Cortez, and I know Wyman loves to tell his stories. I was with Cortez at the very end. Dave had him in the prime of his career. I was with Cortez at the very end of his career, but you could still see Cortez had this weird thing going where it's Warren Sapp, really, is Cortez, where they had these running back legs. I mean, literally, his legs looked like C.J. Procise. He had running back legs, and then he had just this enormous, massive, heavy upper body.
Crazy.
And Vita's got enormous legs and an enormous upper body, but it just all moves.
Yeah.
Like, have you ever seen him in person yet, Vita? If you see him and you stand next to him, he reminds me of Walter Jones, where at 347 pounds, you're still somehow, some way, totally proportional. Like, you're totally proportional. Like, the shoulders and the traps and just everything fits the way. It's like a 220-pound guy that just somehow has another 140 pounds on him. And that usually doesn't happen, right? As you watch these D linemen, or, you know, the kid out, Daron Payne is a good example. He's the same way. He's one of the other top D tackles in this draft. He may be there at 18.
Is he going to be on your list of guys to look at before the draft?
He's just got a few days left. He may be, but he
should be.
But you know what? But honestly, he's 295.
Yeah.
And that's, and you do find 295 guys like that. You should not ever find 345 pound guys.
As much as I would love for him to be, it just seems hard to imagine that Vita Vea is going to be available at number 18. If he is, I would certainly hope that John Schneider pulls the trigger and brings him in here. I think that would be a huge, huge win for them. And look, it's always going to be a position of need for this group. Defensive line, defensive end, it's always going to be something they're interested in bringing in more of.
I mean, and can you imagine to play the one, to play the three, to play the five, to play, I think, in some nickel, you know, situations, to be that big, heavy run stuffer, which, you know, you're going to have in this division against Todd Gurley and against the 49ers and the additions they make. Like, you have to stop the run, or you've got no chance to stop either of those offenses. And, yeah, he could be a big piece of that.
All right, coming up next, Brock, is we are a week away from that draft, and you can listen to all of our coverage, watch all of our coverage as well, 710sports.com. Come hang out on video in the Seahawks Draft Lounge. All the various hosts here at 710 on different days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday as well. All online at 710sports.com. Come hang out with us in the Seahawks Draft Lounge. All right, coming up next, we sit here at Safeco Field, where we will talk to Scott Service at 9:30. There could very well be a major change coming to every single player who participates in a game in this building. It's next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Meritage Distilling's BSB Lounge at the ballpark. When you hear the side is retired, we're referring to those old guys taking shots of BSB at the side of the bar.
You can't spell baseball without BSB.
Meritage Distilling Company, proud sponsor of your Seattle Mariners.
Hey, this is Danny O'Neill from the Danny Dave and Moore Show. Thank you for listening to the Brock and Salk Show. I'd really appreciate it if you checked out Danny Dave and Moore. We're kind of charming, very fun. It's every afternoon from 3 to 7. You can stream us live at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app or listen on demand.
Good news.
Yes!
Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
All right, we're down to Safeco Field. That's the best news, man. Great for us. It is beautiful out already, huh?
Well, sun. Brock is bathing himself in sunlight right now. It's going to be great down there. 12:40 start today. First pitch. That means pregame show at 11:30. Scott Service will join us in 45 minutes at 9:30 this morning.
I'm breaking one of my tenets here, so, which is, you know, let other people say it for you instead of yourself. But I'm going to just say it.
Yeah.
That's top five picture I've ever taken in my life.
Top five.
I mean,
top five.
That's
top five.
That's a top five picture right there on Twitter at Brock ESPN. This morning, I don't know, about 6:40 or so, sun just breaking through. I'm really proud.
You had about a 4-minute window to catch the rays right through.
Top five meals that I've ever had in my entire life.
You're welcome. Thanks, Jim. That's great stuff. Hey, what's in the news?
Good news, bad news, no news.
The 2018 NFL schedule will be released tonight at 5 p.m.
Yeah, good news. And I gave you three quick variables of what I'll be looking for. Avoid the back-to-back East Coast trips. The inclement weather, are you going to find it and you're going to see it, whether that's in September in the heat down in L.A. or some of the different environments or the cold late in the year. And then lastly, and maybe most importantly for me, the franchise quarterbacks that this team faces, the numbers, they are startling through the years. That when this defense faces franchise guys versus the sloppies, you know, how split apart are those guys? Is it backloaded? Is it front-loaded? A young defense that needs to, I think, grow together in some confidence. I'd love to see some of those franchise guys not go back to back, or, you know, maybe even backloaded in the schedule. Those will be three things I'll be watching. Good news.
I'm going to say no news. I try to get into the schedule. I try. I'll get up for it tomorrow to kind of, like, you know, see what it all means. But I think you know me well enough to know that I think you should win the games on your schedule regardless of the order they're in.
And I know we'll spend 8 minutes with Clayton going over every bit of it, because it's the most important.
Of course. But we already know the teams they're going to play. The order you're going to play in, I mean, it's all dumb luck. Who's hurt, who's not, what the weather is, like... Yeah. Outside of a couple of maybe pitfalls.
The prime time. You know, I think that's probably the biggest storyline.
But I think for a lot of people in Seattle who have planned their lives around Seahawks games for the last however many years, that's the biggest part. Like, okay, I know when they're going to be off. I know when the bye week is. I know when to go plan my Airbnb. Like, okay, let's go plan vacation. Get on it.
How about a bye week in the middle tonight. Of the season and not the fifth week of the season?
Whatever. So. You never know when your team's going to be beat up.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Tywan Walker will undergo Tommy John surgery.
No news. I mean, obviously bad news for Tywan Walker, and I feel bad for him. He always seemed like a good dude while he was here. But for us in Seattle, look, no news. He's playing in the National League. You've got your guys from this, Haniger, who has missed a ton of time last year. So you've certainly had your, and Segura, who's missed time as well. Yeah. You've certainly seen some injuries from this trade, and now they're going to as well.
Yeah, I would agree with you. It's just, just personally for him, such a bummer. And it is why Jeff Passan's book, maybe a chance to promote that thing again. It's called The Arm. We read it. It's a tremendous book.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter what your shape is. I was going to say size. Your size, your shape, your throwing mechanics. Are you over the top? Are you a submariner? You know, are you unbelievably physically gifted like Tywan is, a 250-some-pound? It just doesn't matter. When it comes to those ligaments in the elbow, it is precarious, to say the least. And he'll undergo Tommy John. Bad news for him.
Good news, bad news, no news.
A new proposed King County ordinance would ban Mariners players and their opponents from using chewing tobacco inside Safeco Field.
Yeah, that's just bad. Ben Gamble, I don't know what he's going to possibly do. It's no news for you or for me, Mike. We're not one of the 25 or 50 guys, right, on the 25-man roster on either of these clubs that got to come in here and play. But there's just a part of me that they're grown adults. They're 18 plus. They're grown men who are going to make that own decision.
But what about the children?
Somebody please think of the children.
What about the children, Brock?
Yeah.
Come on. You're a big one. Think about the children.
Yeah, you know
guy.
What it is? It's,
what about the children who see their heroes out there spitting?
It's a parenting opportunity. And you know what, Peg?
I've taught you something in 9 years.
No, Peg and Mike did, as we said on the swing set. And in our neighbor, Mr. Lowers, you know, who was a dipper, came over. And Grandma Peg, mom at that time, had Luke and me and Damon on the swing set. Okay. Here you go. Try it. And
that's awesome.
Yes.
How old were you?
Seven.
You put the dip in your mouth?
Yeah. Spun around. Just horrible. Luke swallows it. Damon. Damon, cool guy.
That's vomiting.
This is cool guy. So. Yes.
Just like that scene from Sandlot.
Of course, wow. Luke swallowed it.
Nah, don't swallow it. Whatever you do. This is bad news. Dipping belongs in baseball. Come on.
He's going to be like. Ben Gamble's gonna be like Bobby Valentine, like hiding in the tunnel in disguise, like sneaking a dip, pretending it's Fernando rotting
in the trees in the bullpen.
Every year, that's funny. I covered Terry Francona. He would try to quit dipping, and he does this gross thing where he takes it and like wraps his gum around it.
Oh, so he's chewing like Red Man or something.
I think so. Yeah. And he wraps the gum around it so he gets the gum juice mixed with the tobacco juice.
It's not my choice.
He lost his mind.
It's not my choice. You know, Jim Kelly, I've heard others who come out, you know, and they have an unbelievable story, and it is their story, and those that make that choice are going to make that decision for King County to have an ordinance to tell these ballplayers that.
Because it's not like there's no secondary smoke issue here. It's your own call. All right.
Next.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Mike Leach shared his thoughts on golf.
You know, golf's pretty much for people that... don't swear effectively enough or need practice at it. And so, I mean, there are those that need golf.
I would put Wassel on the list of people who likes to practice.
Immediately come to my mind.
Well, because we've played with Tom. Tom and I on a golf course together is just a great...
The best thing about playing with Tom is he's just very demeaning to himself.
Oh, yeah.
He just talks smack to himself.
Yeah. Swears at himself.
I don't know what that's like.
Yeah, right. You know what that is? That's good news. That's a window in to how bad a golfer Mike Leach was. And he went on in that 4-minute deal. And I always hated it. And his dad and his brother would play. And he'd sit and read magazines. And unfortunately, he just never got bit by the golf bug because he never had any success with it. That's bad news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The NBA playoffs are getting their best TV ratings in 5 years.
Yeah, blowing up. Fastest growing sports in ratings and revenue going right now. And I'm not surprised. They've created a marketing machine that right now is rivaling the NFL. They are promoting their biggest stars. They love soap operas. They have drama. Mike, it is an event. Millennials want events. They want to feel connected. Well, you get it more in the NBA than any other sport going right now. Not a surprise to me to see it blowing up, and so it's going to come back to Seattle.
Why can't I get into it? What is it? Everything you said is true. I recognize all of the great successes in the NBA, and unlike soccer, which I've never liked, I used to watch basketball, same as everybody else, all the time. It was probably my favorite sport to watch as a kid. Why am I so averse to even like 5 minutes of it? I just instantly stop watching.
That's a good question. I don't know.
I don't either.
Is it too much drama? Is it just too much?
I don't
the stars?
To be honest, I don't care about the drama that much. It doesn't interest me. But when I watch it, and by the way, I understand the game is better than it's ever been, and there's more
and the
superstars.
Level of athleticism
and
is just off the
when
charts.
When I watch it, and I don't have this problem with other sports. When I watch it, I start doing other things. I get distracted. I can't focus on it.
I will tell you what's very interesting. I remember listening to Greeny, right, say this for a bunch of years. Like my kids, like of any of the sports.
I know.
And they're entirely the same way.
Hold on just a second. Just ask people to explain to you why you don't like something?
Danny, what are you doing there, Danny?
I'm filling in on Tom and Curly, and
I'm about to go on. Who invited you into this show anyway?
Who speaks to you as if you asked for your opinion? But I hear Mike Salk say, why can't I get into it? I don't know. Maybe because you're kind of judgmental sometimes, or you dismiss things out of hand. There's a number of different possibilities, none of which any of us can really answer.
I was looking for help, Danny. That's
I'm
all.
Trying to provide it to you.
Oh, well, no, you're not. You're just being mean. I was looking for a little help. How dare you?
Hope you guys have a good rest of your show. Enjoy service.
Really appreciate it. All right, back to the drawing board, apparently. Danny, no help at all. Sheesh. Man.
No, you were, I think, going to be a junior.
I am. I've tried a bunch of times to start watching it again, and every time I just start doing something else.
By the way,
I'm not interested. And by the way, LeBron, I don't care who wins.
LeBron, unbelievable yesterday. I mean, flat out unbelievable.
A big part of it is I don't have a team to root for. I have no rooting interest in anything that happens in the NBA.
Yep.
I just don't.
I think that would play a significant factor.
I need a rooting interest.
Yeah.
I need somebody or something or some team to root for. And maybe if there's a team here, I will. But I don't know. I used to go to NBA games because I covered them, and I wouldn't even go in. I just like sit outside.
That's not true. You went in the shower with Kevin Garnett?
Yeah, because I had to after the game. I'd sit in the media room in the back.